Okay. So, I guess the next thing is to talk about invariants of W braids, or more specifically, finite type invariants of W braids. You know, you could say that it's not terribly interesting because in some sense W braids are understood. They are just automorphisms of the free group. So, I mean, it's not so necessary to find invariants. Okay? But also, please remember that this is just the beginning of the story, and later we will switch from W braids to W knots to W tangles to various other W things, where it will be interesting to look at invariants. Okay? So, and this is somehow a warm-up study. So I want to study finite type invariants of W braids. But even before that, maybe I'll tell you a few words about the classical case. So about finite type invariants of braids or knots. So very, very quickly, let me remind you about finite type invariants of braids or knots. Is this a waste of your time, by the way? Okay. So, definition. Okay. So, first of all, a completely general statement. Okay? Whenever you have let V be an invariant of, well, it could be either knots or braids, ordinary braids. I don't care which one you choose. Okay? But if I'm talking about knots, I need them to be oriented. So the strands must have an orientation, and they should be they should move in an oriented space. So there should be a distinction between an overcrossing and undercrossing. Okay? And if we're talking about braids, I think this is automatic. I mean, the strands are always oriented. Any such invariant can be extended to singular knots or braids. So what's a singular knot? A singular knot is a knot that is allowed to have double points, and I'll sort of put a dot to emphasize that these are double points, as well as ordinary crossings. These are not virtual crossings. These are actual strands meeting in R3, visiting the same point in R3. This is sort of, things are here connected to each other, are glued to each other. They're not passing virtually through each other. Okay? Anyway, the extension is very simple. So you just define V of a knot with a double point to be, you take this double point and you can resolve it either to become an overcrossing or to become an undercrossing. You can take V and evaluate it on this or on that, okay, and take the difference of the two things. So it's the usual convention applies that I draw only the part of the knot that I care about. So when I draw V of a double point, I really mean V of a knot that has a double point. So this is a short for this picture. And then this is a short for that picture with the double point replaced by an overcrossing, and this is a short for that picture with the double points replaced by an undercrossing. So in the particular case in which this stands for that, this would stand for, let's see, if I replace this by an overcrossing, which way does it go? Overcrossing would mean this one is the upper one. Oh, so you get a trefoil. Okay? Wait. Yes. So in this case, you get a trefoil. And in this case, if you flip this and this becomes an undercrossing, so this becomes this picture, then, well, now you can slide this off and twist it away. So this is the unknot. Okay? So in the case where V is, sorry, in the case where the knot in question was a knot with a single double point, then V evaluated on that knot is V of the trefoil mean minus V of the unknot. Okay? Now, I've used the example of a knot, but equally well, I could have used a braid. Right? Same pictures exactly have a meaning for braids, just as well. So instead of a singular knot, it would be a singular braid. So a braid that has some honest crossings, but also some double points. And then the meaning of a double point would be over minus under. Okay. Now, this can be iterated. And you can define V on a knot that has many double points. So again, this stands for an arbitrary knot that has three double points in it. Okay? Or alternatively, an arbitrary braid with three double points. And the definition will be, well, you can either just say that this is equal to the sum over the 2n resolutions, okay? Sorry, 2 to the n resolutions, where each crossing becomes either over or under, and there are 2 to the n possibilities to do that, of plus or minus, so you get signs, so that, and the sign is minus 1 raised to the power of the crossings that got resolved to become, or of the double points that got resolved to become under crossings. And here you'll get V of the resolved thing. So I could either define it this way, or I could just iterate. So I would say, first resolve this to be an over minus under, you'll get two knots. Then resolve that one to be over minus under, you get now four knots, each of the two becomes two, and so on. Okay? Anyway, I'm almost sick of myself repeating this sentence again and again and again. I've done it I don't know how many times in my life, but differences are cousins of derivatives. Okay? So you should be thinking of this, or this being the difference of V on two nearby knots, somehow, right, these two knots are nearby because they differ at only one crossing, so you should be thinking of this as differentiating V. So in some sense, you should be thinking of V extended to knots with three double points as if it's V differentiated three times. Okay? And then definition, V is of type M if it is like a polynomial of degree M, meaning it vanishes if you differentiate it M plus 1 times. Okay? So V is of type M if V evaluated on any knot with actually, well, m or, well, m plus 1 or more double points is equal to 0. Okay? So maybe I should say here always. So if whenever you evaluate V on any knot with more than n double points, you get 0. Okay? So, and again, you should think of invariants of type M as polynomials of degree M on the space of knots, or alternatively, on the space of braids, okay? And, well, in general, if V is of type M for some M, we say that V is of finite type, and then you should be thinking of invariants of finite type as being polynomials or knots or braids with an unspecified degree, with of some degree. Okay? So, okay. Something. Okay. So, so, one way to study polynomials of degree m is to differentiate them m times, okay? Because then you get a constant. Or in fact, these are polynomials on some high-dimensional space, the space of all knots, so you will not get a constant, but a system of constants. So, in some way, what I want is to understand such systems of constants. So, yes?
Do we know examples of invariants which are not of finite type, like any of the classical ones?
Well, basically, it's a bit like polynomials. Okay, if you take a random thing, it's not a polynomial. So take the invariant which is 1 on the unknot and 0 everywhere else. It's a very hard to compute invariant, okay? But it's definitely a knot invariant. So, well, it's not a polynomial. It's not a finite type invariant. Take any finite type invariant, or take any invariant and exponentiate it. So, I don't know, if you have a knot, it has a self-linking number, say. So take the exponential of the self-linking number, it will not be a finite type, it will not be a finite type invariant. Basically, if you...
You can still ask whether everything is a limit of finite type invariant.
Yeah, and that would be the parallel of asking whether polynomials separate, whether every function, or at least every well-behaved function of real variables can be approximated by polynomials. And for the case of knots, it's an open problem. So we do not know if finite type invariants separate knots. Okay? Well, in the case of braids, we do know the answer. So for braids, we do know that finite type invariants separate braids. But even for braids, it's easy to construct braid invariants that are not finite type invariants, that are not finite type. For example, take, you know, the braid, the function on braids, which is 1 on the trivial braid and 0 everywhere else. Okay? So actually, the real question to ask is, are there any finite type invariants? A priori, it's not at all obvious that there are any. Okay? So, this not being a course on finite type invariants, I will not move sideways and, or not being a course on finite type invariants on, of ordinary knots, I will not move sideways and prove to you that many, many, many classical invariants are either finite type or at least can be approximated by finite type invariants. So basically, the Jones polynomial and many other similar things, well, can be approximated by finite type invariants. So the finite type, so the theory of finite type invariants is at least as rich as the Jones polynomial, okay, and related things. But again, this is a side issue for now. I mean, I'm only giving this definition for motivation. I will repeat this motivation later for W knots with a slightly different, in a slightly different way. And for W naughts, we reconstruct all the finite type invariants. Okay? Okay. Okay, so anyway, how do we study finite type invariants? So we say, we look, well, so how do we study polynomials of degree m? We look at their mth derivative. So if v is of type m, then I want to look at v evaluated on knots that have precisely m double points. Okay? And this is somehow the mth derivative. And morally speaking, it should be a constant. Because we've differentiated something of degree m times. So in what sense is it a constant? It's a constant in the sense that it no longer depends on the topology. So if in the knot appearing here, there is an additional crossing, which is, say, an overcrossing, and you take that crossing and replace it by an undercrossing, so you get a new knot with m double points, and the extra crossing got flipped, then v of this is equal to v of that. Why? Because by definition, the difference is v evaluated on a knot with m plus 1 double crossings, and that was assumed to be 0 because we're assuming that v is of type m. Okay? So v does not sit, so v differentiated m times, or maybe I'll call such a thing w, so w of v. So w of v will be v differentiated m times, so it's a function from m singular knots, so knots with m double points, into, I guess I never said invariant valued where. So let's assume it's valued in some abelian group A, it doesn't matter which, maybe the real numbers, okay? So WV is somehow insensitive to topology. It doesn't see the topology of the M singular knot, because when you flip over to under, nothing changes. Or said differently, it's a function on m singular knots modulo the relation that an overcrossing is equal to an undercrossing. And now you can ask yourself, so what is this quotient space? If it doesn't see the topology, it can only see combinatorics. And the combinatorics it sees is somehow the ordering by which these double points are connected to each other. So now the story splits. I have the braid side of the story and the knot side of the story. So if I'm talking about knots, then what does it mean, the combinatorics of an M singular knot? So let me draw an M singular knot. Here is an M singular knot. Yes. If I can no longer see the topology, if it's irrelevant whether this one is over or under, the only thing I can still see is, well, I can walk along the knot and remember where I've been to each double point. Okay? So if I start walking here, I'll go through double point number 1, then through double point number 2, then through double point number 1 once again, and then to double point number 2 once again, and then I'll come back to the starting point. Okay, so the only thing I see from this M singular note is a certain string, 1, 2, 1, 2. Okay, in which the integers from 1 to M occur, and each one occurs exactly twice. And in fact, the only thing I care about is the pairing between those integers, because I've enumerated the double points arbitrarily. I could have called this one 2 and this one 1, and then the string I would see would be 2, 1, 2, 1 instead. Okay? So again, I get strings of 1s and 2s, in fact, cyclic strings of 1 through n, in which every letter appears twice, and the standard way to mark such a string is by a so-called chord diagram. So a chord diagram is a circle which somehow represents the parameter space of the note, and we connect by chords any two points on the parameter space that are the same in the image. So in other words, this chord somehow stands for the whole double point number 1. And a chord like and a second chord will stand for double point number 2. So if you start walking along this note, you see 1 and then 2 and then 1 and then 2 again. Okay? And alternatively, let's write a different two singular note. So here, the order by which you go through the double points is 1, 2, 2, 1. It's a different ordering, and the corresponding chord diagram will be this one. Okay? And if I were to do the same for grades, I would see something slightly different. So let's do the case of non-pure grades. So here is a a three singular non-pure braid. What can I say about this braid combinatorially? What do I see here? Well, the only thing I can tell is that no flippings of overcrossing by undercrossing. So if I move modal by undercrossing is equal to overcrossing, no such flipping will ever change the skeleton. So I can still see that the permutation underlying this braid is this one.
Hello.
Yeah, I'll move out in a minute.
No worries.
Okay. And then the next thing I can see is that I see a double point between strand number 1 and strand number 3, so I'll mark it as a chord. I see a double point between strand number 1 and strand number 2, so I'll mark it as another chord. And then I see a double point between 2 and 3, so I'll mark it as a third chord. And the moral is that if I have a type M invariant on braids, I will get a function on pictures that look like this. So M vertical strands below a certain line, and then N vertical strands below a certain line, and then M chords connecting them, and a permutation above. And let's stop here and continue next time.